did you find this?
Hell yeah, it's ladies' night.
Ladies' night.
Edmonton's up. They're going to go to game seven, I think. Except Florida just scored again, so it's 2-1. We'll see.
Who's a worse sports state, Florida or New England?
I mean, Massachusetts?
There you go. Yeah, sorry. Same fucking bean people.
I would root for Florida over Massachusetts.
I think I would too, but it's clearly evident. I mean, come on, like we were talking earlier, like 30 seconds ago, a state that never gets ice somehow can support what, two or three hockey teams? They got Tampa Bay Lightning, they got the Florida Panthers. Was it two? Yeah, I think just two.
I don't think they get below 70 degrees. Like, I don't think they ever have, like, not spring at the very worst.
And it's evidence, like, other than this year in hockey that people don't care about. Have you ever seen, like, the Tampa Bay Rays, like, their stadium, like, when they play home games? They, like, barely sell 100 tickets.
Dude, yeah, it's like Southern California sports. It's like, unless they're winning or you're the Dodgers, nobody gives a shit. Like, straight up.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. I wonder if Shane knows, like, the attendance now at Angels games because Ohtani's gone.
Surprise. Okay.
Especially because he just went to the Dodgers. He just went 20 miles away.
There's a lot more white people, but the stadium definitely is, like, still full, which, like, breaks my brain because they're absolute dog shit franchise. Yeah, it's sold out every time. I don't know if people are just bored and it's something to do. It might wear out as the season progresses, right? Like, it's, like, cool to do in the beginning, but yeah. The demographic has definitely gone more white.
Oh, shit, guys. Quick update. They just called that Florida goal back. Guy, it was offsides when he passed it up to the center. Oh, shit. 2-0, Edmonton. I'm rooting for you, Katie.
Go, Katie. Yeah, Canada. We're doing it. All right. So here at Stateside, it's episode 138. As Glenn Danzig and the Misfits once said, we are 138.
Oh, shit.
I don't know what that meant, but it sounds kind of tough.
It wasn't something like Michael Graves said, which, or not, who's the other guy? Was it Michael Graves? He's the racist.
Danzig just came out and said some weird anti-vax shit on stage, so.
Well, really? He shouldn't also be in the sun anymore at his age. Or his playing fest. Yeah, I don't think he should be outside anymore.
Sorry, but sir, this weather is for people over 5'5". So a couple things. Ryan, is Jerry Jones still alive?
I believe there is no change in status.
Okay. Shane, is Robert Kraft still alive?
Yeah. Bill Belichick is dating a 25-year-old though, so
yeah, what is up with that bullshit? what the fuck, all of a sudden he's just dating some guy's daughter? Like, she probably hasn't even been outside, like, living out of her without her parents.
She what couldn't the hell's even going when, on? When COVID hit. I'm just, like, amazed that, like, it's like the Big Daddy scene where it's like his old balls, like, think about how Bill Belichick's, like, package, bro. Like, how grotesque that thing looks.
His 5-year plan is don't die.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Maybe his balls sag really low, and that's why he's got to wear those crazy sweatshirts. He's got one for his balls, too.
Kangaroo pouch.
He cuts little holes out in the underwear.
That's where the sleeves going?
Like he cuts his sleeves off, yeah.
All right, perfect time to transition. We're doing it. All right, so, Ryan, you got a 138 of the week. Put it to us.
Yeah. All right, guys, this week I want to talk about, I'm doing the Jets this week. So I decided to do one of the greatest wide receivers in NFL history and probably one of the greatest Jets wide receivers ever.
Denzel Mims.
Currently, let's see, he is sixth all time in pro football touchdown receptions. And is a member of the AFL all-time team. All right, let's talk a little bit about Don Maynard. All right.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. 88 touchdowns, Over 11,000 receiving yards in his career, 633 receptions. He was part of, Tony, what was that? Was it the greatest game ever played? Was that?
No, that was Giants-Colts, 1950s.
Okay.
He was part of, was he on the Super Bowl with Namath?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. That was his quarterback. What game am I thinking of? Maybe it's not that one. So, the Giant, he played college football at Texas Western College, now the University of Texas of El Paso. 3 seasons with them from 1954 to 56. He only caught 28 passes, but he averaged 27.6 yards per reception.
Damn.
Marvin right? Mims numbers.
He was actually mostly a running back. He had 843 rushing yards on 154 attempts for a 5.4 average. He also returned punts and kickoffs.
Denzel Mims.
Yeah.
Marvin Mims.
Yeah, don't fucking slander it, all right? Get it right.
Altogether, he ended up with 2,283 all-purpose yards. He also played a little bit of defensive back and had 10 interceptions.
Holy shit.
That's crazy.
Awesome player. I guess that's what happens when you go to play University of Texas El Paso.
Yeah. That's true.
The Giants saw something in him, and in the 1957 NFL draft, he was taken in the 9th round, the 109th overall selection. Let's see, in 12 games as a rookie, he had 12 rushes for 45 yards, caught 5 passes for 84 yards. He played on special teams and then got released by the Giants in 1959 training camp. He played 1 game in the CFL for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Let's go!
Catching just 1 pass for 10 yards.
Let's go.
And like we all know, players back in the early beginnings of football weren't getting paid the money they were today. So it says that he was also a plumber and a teacher.
Awesome.
During the beginning parts of his career, he not only is he 6th all time in touchdown receptions, but he is also the first player to ever sign with the New York Jets in 1960 when they were the Titans. In 1963, they changed the name back to, but they started the New York Jets franchise.
Damn.
The New York Press said that he was an NFL reject in 1960, but he teamed with Art Powell to form the first professional wide receiver tandem to each gain over 1,000 yards on receptions in a season, with the pair achieving this milestone again in 1962. Damn. So 61 and 62, the Jets had a pair of 1,000-yard receivers, which I don't ever think we'll see that again for the Jets. But
they haven't since.
Right. So in 65, this is when Joe Namath came to the team. So Namath was a rookie in 65. That year with Namath, Maynard had 1,218 yards on 68 receptions and 14 touchdowns in Namath's rookie season.
Damn. Holy shit.
Right. 14 touchdowns, right? Namath only threw 22 that year.
Damn.
So the rest of the team had 8. He had 14.
Wow.
In 67, that was Namath's historic over 4,000-yard passing season, and Maynard had 1,434 of those yards.
Wow. Holy shit.
This guy's right? a monster.
Right? Yep.
That year, he also averaged 20.2 yards per catch. Yep. In 1968, season opener against Kansas City, Maynard had 200-plus receiving yards for the first time in his career and passed Tommy McDonald as an active leader in receiving yards, where he remained for the next 6 seasons until his retirement.
Fuck, this dude's got it, man.
He actually held a bunch of receiving records for a while until, you know, we had like Jerry Rice and more popular receivers coming up, but that's pretty good for like 1960s NFL when, you know, passing was a thing, but like it wasn't the thing. It wasn't what everyone tried to do.
I watched Super Bowl like 7 or something, 9 today. It was the Vikings versus the Steelers. And, dude, I think there was, like, maybe a total of 12 passes thrown the whole game.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was miserable.
So the Jets won the AFL championship game in 1968 against the Raiders, 27-23. Maynard caught 6 passes for 118 yards and 2 touchdowns. His 14-yard catch in the first quarter gave the Jets the lead, and a 6-yard catch in the fourth quarter proved to be the game winner. The Jets also that year won Super Bowl III, 16-7 over the Baltimore Colts. I guess that was considered the first upset in Super Bowl history.
That's the one that Namath guaranteed victory in.
Yeah, and get this. Maynard played that game, but he didn't have any catches because he was dealing with a hamstring issue.
Career's over.
He played for 4 more seasons with the Jets after Super Bowl III. Let's see. He ended up going to the Houston Texans / Shreveport Steamers of the embryonic World Football League when he was 39 years old. He had just 5 receptions and decided to call it quits.
We got to bring that team back.
Right?
Louisiana needs a team.
One of only 20 players who were in the AFL for its entire 10-year existence. Maynard was also one of only 7 players who played their entire AFL career with one team.
Wow. Good
for him.
Yep. After that, he went on to do a bunch of charity work. So he was in the coin toss in the 1998 Super Bowl when they were commemorating the 1958 greatest game ever played.
Sure.
Dude, he was even Grand Marshal at the El Paso Sun Bowl Thanksgiving parade.
Shit, that's right. Wow. Now we're talking.
What a move though. Like, hey, I lived in New York for like 15 years. I'm gonna go back to El Paso.
Yeah. Yep. He, like I said, also worked as a math and industrial arts teacher. He sold a variety of products. I don't know what, and was also a financial planner.
Damn.
Yeah.
Dude, some people just have that dog.
Yeah, for yeah. sure.
And it ain't me.
No, I was not made to grind.
His son also went on to coach in the CFL. He coached the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the 90s. Right?
Of course, classic. Classic Bombers.
Yeah, but someone who is 6th all-time in touchdown receptions with 88. I don't know if that's for wide receivers or all players. I think it's all players. But that is Mr. Don Maynard, famous Jet.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's especially good. For being on that franchise.
Right?
Was Namath Mormon too, or is that just Steve Young?
I don't know.
I think Namath fucked way too much to be Mormon.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Or unless it was like a polygamy thing, but...
that's also a good point.
He was poly.
All right, so I have a list today.
Oh shit, we're going back to the good ones.
A list. I'm covering the Packers this week, so as you may know, I'm a Bears fan, which means I'm on the right side of history, and I'll eventually be vindicated. Right? Like that's. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I handle covering not only the worst organization in the history of sports, but possibly the meanest group of assholes of all time? Well. I decided that, like Joe Brandon, I need to reach across the aisle to find peace, and I think it would be best if I offered the olive branch by speaking to the character of the organization and 5 individuals that I believe best embody the character of this long-standing and proud franchise.
Okay.
Number 1 is actually a callback to a previous bit I did on Randall Woodfield, a.k.a. the I-5 Killer, who was actually drafted by the Packers in 1974.
What?
It's very Packers of them to do that. Just serial killer. Terrible. Classic Packers, though, you know?
Maybe it was part of, like, a trend. The football was like, maybe if we take, like, serial killers, they'll actually, like, kill people on the field.
So there's a... So, okay. So my original intention here for this next one was to say that, like, Jeffrey Dahmer was a Packers fan, probably. Right? That was my goal. Because he's from
Milwaukee.
Because his dad beat it into him.
So I was trying to find a picture of him in a Packers shirt or something, and I found something way worse. So, Ryan, I don't think you're a big enough true crime guy. Maybe you're secretly like a huge true crime guy, but I know Shane.
I mean, I watch a lot of this stuff, and I could honestly see Tony like making like a research experiment where he like goes to prisons and interviews serial killers and asks them one question, like, were you a Green Bay Packers fan, or are you a Green Bay Packers fan?
Fucking cheese hunter. You might know, then you guys both might remember this. Do you remember the kid that escaped Dahmer all drugged up and naked and managed to like find people and call the cops?
The, like, the 14-year-old.
And the cops are like, icky, gay.
Yeah, and sent him back to Dahmer. Yeah. Yeah.
No, he said like it was his boyfriend and he was just drunk or something. Or
as he's bleeding out of his body.
Right. So those cops got canned, which they should have.
God bless.
2 years later, they went to court and got not only reinstated to the police force because they did not commit, quote, gross negligence, end quote, but each of those officers got over $50,000 in back pay given to them. The judge who ruled for the cops is a guy named Robert J. Perrins. And Robert J. Perrins was not only the Packers team president from 1982 to 1989.
What?
But 4 years after this ruling, he was elected into the Packers Hall of Fame.
What?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
I know. I was like, I had all this kind of like silly, like, fuck Green Bay stuff. And then I was like, oh, and this is like evil.
So this was in the 90s then?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How has he not been pulled from their Hall of Fame?
They put him in afterwards.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wish I had this information when I went to Green Bay. Be like, did you guys know?
you guys see this name up here?
So the rest of the stuff we're getting into is a little bit more lighthearted. It's more of a tone shift. But I don't think it's a stretch to say if you're a Packers fan, you support serial killers. Because even though one's an accident, two's a pattern.
I mean, there's been some crazy serial killers from Ed Gein.
Yeah, probably like, Packers fan.
I know you guys are like Midwest boys, but like Wisconsin, the fuck is there to do in Wisconsin, right? Like
kill people,
dude.
I drove,
play pull tabs.
I drove with my dad 4 hours from Milwaukee to Green Bay, bro. And those 4 hours it was beautiful, but dude, the desolate nothingness that existed between these two spaces, and I was like, yeah, I see why people have bodies in their farms. Makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I see why people murder people.
Yep. All right. So Ryan, you covered Kabir Gbajabiamila about half a year ago.
Okay.
Remember that?
Yeah.
He was a crazy good pass rusher. Did you know that he was also tased and arrested the day before we went on COVID lockdown because he refused to sign his divorce papers?
Wait, was he like fighting someone about it? Why would they tase him just because he?
It's wild shit because I always side on anyone who's not a cop in situations that involve cops. But I'm really only bringing this up because I didn't know he was one of this specific type of individual. So I'm going to quote from the Green Bay Post-Gazette. Quote, Gbajabiamila, as he has done on a number of occasions, represented himself in the legal proceedings. He has unsuccessfully tried to convince a series of judges and court commissioners that his theory of sovereign citizenship and his belief of his religious values supersede civil law.
Listen, like, this is like a sick double tap of insane, right? Of like a person who thinks they can convince a judge that they know the law as well as the sovereign citizen idiot, right?
Yep.
They're perfect tandem.
Yep. Next up, Brett Favre, famous Green Bay Packer. You can't get much more Packer than that. Oh, wait.
He's a famous Jet, too.
Hang on. What's this? I'm just hearing about this right now. Brett Favre sent pictures of his shriveled little wiener to a woman who didn't want to see it.
And he convinced. Oh, we got more news.
Hang on. I'm getting reports that the league used forensic analysis to determine they couldn't prove it was Favre's tiny dick in those pictures, and therefore he wasn't suspended.
Forensic analysis? Like they just, hey, come into this room, pull your pants down.
Show us your wiener. He was fined for not participating in the investigation, which is weird. Like, wait, now you don't want someone to see your penis? Anyways.
Or wait, no, I bet you they did like a, you know, like a dick lineup and she couldn't identify which one it was.
Dude, it was on the internet.
They put gray sweatpants on everybody in the team. They're like, all right, waist down, figure it out.
Would you guys also believe, and this is news to me, he's stolen state funds from welfare, federal grants, and the state's Department of Human Service?
Over millions of dollars.
I heard that. Was that a COVID like business loan thing?
He did multiple. He's done multiple grifts. He's taken like half a mil to give speeches that he didn't give.
This was a welfare scam he was pulling.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, really?
And people skimmed over this when I was in Green Bay. Everyone's like, Brett Favre. I'm like, you guys know he's a big piece of shit, right? They're like, yeah, but he could throw that ball. I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah.
You guys know he's from Louisiana, right?
Oh, he's got fucking Wranglers. So I ask you, how much more Packer can you get? So I have a quote from his December 2023 deposition in the welfare fraud case. Quote, being a Green Bay Packer gave me the courage to rip off poor people. It's the Packer way. Boy, do we suck.
Wow.
End quote. So there's proof right there. And last but not least, on December 19th, 2010, Aaron Hernandez caught 4 passes for 31 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Patriots' 31-27 win against Green Bay in Week 15. His 2-touchdown performance earned him Pepsi NFL Rookie of the Week honors. He would later go on to murder multiple people. Now, yep. This doesn't directly implicate the Green Bay organization, but I don't believe in coincidences. So,
he committed homicide on a team, and it gave him the brazenness to be like, I could do this off the field too.
He might have played Green Bay earlier in the year and just, like Shane, went on that drive from Green Bay to Milwaukee because they couldn't fly out of Green Bay and just was like, fuck this shit, man. I got to kill someone.
Or if the Packers would have signed Odin Lloyd, he wouldn't have been around Aaron Hernandez.
That's true.
Oh, shit.
So I'm not saying that the Packers are culpable in those murders, but I'm not saying that they're not culpable. And so that's my list of the 5 most high character individuals to ever be part of the Green Bay Packers organization.
Damn.
Go Pack, go.
Woo. All right. We're sticking with an NFC North. I'm talking a local guy. Who went to college in Minnesota and is regarded as basically the best Viking in history. So we're going to cover Carl Eller today.
Okay.
He was a purple people eater.
Yes.
Damn. Carl was a big boy in 1962 when he played for the Golden Gophers at the University of Minnesota, 6'6" and 250 pounds. So being this big and being, he was their leading defensive end his freshman year. He also helped the Gophers win the Rose Bowl in his freshman year. During his junior and senior year, he would actually be forced to play both sides of the ball, playing left tackle and defensive end, where he would be named All-American both years, true freak athlete. He was also named the Minnesota Defensive Player of the Year every year he played at the university, so 4 years in a row.
Damn.
So he would then be drafted 6th overall in the 1964 NFL draft and 5th overall in the AFL draft by the Buffalo Bills, but Monopoly rules, and he had to sign to the Vikings.
Awful.
So Eller was in this era of domination of the Vikings. So after his 5th season, Minnesota won 10 Central Division titles out of 11 seasons. They would then win the NFL championship in 1969, but would lose in Super Bowl IV to the AFL Kansas City Chiefs, which is like a really weird complex sentence to say in current day, like when you break down like teams in the NFL is like, well, as well as history.
Sure.
The Vikings would win the NFL championship in 1973, 1974, 1976. Eller would be one of 11 Vikings to play in all 4 of their Super Bowls. So I'm going to stat dump here because it's really impressive. He only missed 3 total games in his entire NFL career, starting 209 out of 225 games.
Okay.
Damn.
Okay.
He's the all-time Viking sack leader with 130.5 sacks. He had a career high of 15 sacks in 1969, which he repeated in 1977, and he had 7 seasons of 10 sacks or more. He was the defensive player of the year in 1971, which is like wild how he only won it once in his entire career when he was that dominant for that long. 5-team first All-Pros, 2-team second All-Pros, 6 Pro Bowls, 70s All-Decade Team, Vikings Ring of Honor, Collegiate Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Fame. So after he retired, he went back to college to get his bachelor's degree in human services, where he would join a frat at the age of 50, which rules in a vacuum. But
are
like
you
when
serious?
You look at
that, that's allowed.
Yeah, apparently, it might have been like a satellite school or something like that, or like a
sure
hey, honorary brother.
This is where the grandpas hang out, right? But like, imagine like a 50-year-old dude like trying to pledge, like 6'6", 250. Like, hey, all right, you're just in. We don't got to haze you. So using his degree, he'd become a licensed drug and alcohol counselor. In 1986, he would found a group of substance abuse clinics called the Triumph Life Centers and would also work for the Minnesota Department of Health Services, in which he specialized in addressing disparities between whites and people of color.
Interesting.
In 2000,
that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. He's helping out his community.
Yeah, and then he also helped out his community too, because in 2006 he was arrested for a DUI and would be arrested again in 2008 for a fourth degree assault on a cop, which rules.
Oh my god,
that's cool. I'm fucking mad.
What's considered fourth degree? Like touching with your pinky?
I'm assuming so. Or like that guy who like the cop jumped on his car and he fell.
Maybe like spit on him or something.
The golf guy. Yeah, the cop like tried to climb on his car and the dude drove away at like 5 miles an hour.
Scheffler.
Yeah. And he ruined his pants.
All charges dropped.
As it should be. He also did get second degree refusal to submit on chemical testing for this offense. He was 66 at the time. 66 at the time of this offense, and would serve 60 days in county jail.
I mean, and
he's 66, bro. Just let him fucking go, right?
Right.
And then since 2020, he's worked as a consultant for research-based companies that develop medical treatments for diseases. It was very unspecified because I think it's like a giant umbrella of a megacorp. So sure, definitely sure. One of those people who are like, hey, I'm going to do it all in life.
Yeah. It's living Moss. That's living right? Moss. That was a good way to start, guys. That's I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go and hear about the New York football Jets.
All right, J-E-T, guys. Jets.
Ready to talk a little bit about the Foot Clan?
All right.
So let's start off. We got Aaron Rodgers. All right. What the hell is going on with this guy, guys? Tears his Achilles after four plays in the first game and decides, hey, I'm going to go on vacation. And I'm not going to show up to minicamp.
Hey, man, he said he was going to be back and play the season.
Is that already a curse, like going into the season for the Jets? Like Aaron Rodgers just doesn't care anymore.
I think the fact of like we called it last year, where like the potential of him being washed is there, where like this is a very much easy out, right? Or to be like, oh yeah, sure, the injury like set me back. I'm not like, I don't want to like tarnish my legacy or whatever. Like,
sure.
I think this is an easy lateral play for them, or for him, for his ego. But yeah, I don't.
Sure.
I feel bad because, like, I actually don't feel bad because the Jets are just stupid, right? Like, they knew what they were signing up for. Like, when you convince, like, hey, you got to give Alan Lazard $44 million, like, you deserve whatever evil happens to you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's true. So I know that Tony is, like, super high on the Jets this year. He thinks they're going to be really good, but we have to remember some things, right? Let's start off with my prediction that I said. Aaron Rodgers will play six or less games this year. All right. So if that happens, the Jets will not be good.
Can we talk about your Breece Hall prediction last year? Because you fucking nailed that.
Yeah, Breece Hall was good. Good as hell last year. Yeah, ended up with almost 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns. But what really was his bread and butter, which, I mean, now granted, he got like a couple hundred yards in like two or three plays, but his receiving, they really trusted him in the receiving game. 76 receptions for almost 600 yards and 4 more touchdowns, which was awesome. There was that one, what was that, like week 13 or whatever, he had that like 80 or 90 yard catch. I want to say it was like the first play of the drive or something like that.
He won me many weeks. I think it was it was semifinals of playoffs. So I think it was like week 15. Cause I remember that happened in like the chat and the guy was like, yeah, it's already over. I'm not even going to give a shit. And I was like,
right,
give me your money.
Yeah. Which, I had him in redraft in me and Tony's home league. But they also brought on this year Braylon Allen, who I was really high into going into this draft this year. He's the biggest running back in this year's draft class at 235 pounds. And he played for Wisconsin, who just runs all the time. So he got plenty of experience.
Youngest too, right?
Yeah, he's only 20.
20?
Yeah, he's going to be 21 in January. So he's only 20 right now.
Wow.
So I think, you know, Breece goes down, or if they use him as like a 1-2 punch, kind of like they're going to do with Walker and Charbonnet in Seattle, like there's a chance that Braylon Allen can come out and be someone really good who wasn't on a lot of people's radar coming into this year. But I felt like he was going to be really good going into the draft.
Tony's going to leap through the fucking screen right now. All this Izzy Abanaconda slander.
He's done, Tony.
I'm keeping it in.
I remember last year on Hard Knocks when he broke whatever with his leg, and maybe didn't break something, but he was walking around with crutches for a while, and I was like, oh no, the talent is gone. He never really materialized into anything during the year.
They have like 9 running backs now, too.
Yeah, well, let's see. We got Breece Hall, we got Braylon Allen. They also drafted Isaiah Davis, who I really don't know too much about, but I don't think he's going to be your third down developmental back. And then Abanaconda is listed at fourth.
Dalvin Cook's not on the team anymore, right?
No, Dalvin Cook, no.
Yeah, we'll just go through the roster really quick. So, because I got some other stuff before we get started to go too deep already. So at quarterback, we got Rodgers. Backing them up, they picked up Tyrod Taylor.
Yes.
So if Rodgers does go down, it might not be as bad as we think.
Trevor Simeon.
Zach Wilson. I was going to say Sam Darnold, not Zach Wilson.
Dude, this is how we break the Tyrod Taylor curse, is Aaron Rodgers sacrifices his body for Tyrod to play the whole season like Tyrod does for every other player.
Yeah, right. So it might not be too bad if Rodgers goes down, but ultimately Tyrod's just mainly a game clock manager. Then they got Jordan Travis and Andrew Reesley. Those are just developmental guys. We already went through the running backs. At wide receiver, we got Garrett Wilson, who surprisingly, with the shitty quarterback that they had last year, still put up over 1,000 yards, which was kind of awesome. And I kind of hope he does that again this year. The more I did research on the Jets this week, the more I believe in the Garrett Wilson hype that Tony was preaching earlier in the year, and still is really high on him.
Yeah.
They added Mike Williams. I don't know what's going to happen after his week 3 Achilles injury, if he's ever going to be 100% again. But at the beginning of the season, at least he'll be somewhat of a decoy because of his name and his pedigree with the Chargers. They got Xavier Gibson. They drafted Malachi Corley, who I wasn't really high into, but I think you guys liked him, right?
He was fine.
Yeah. Of course, we've got $40 million man, Alan Lazard. And then Jason Brownlee. And then they've got a slew of like 4 or 6 more receivers that aren't really going to do anything. Tight end room. We got Tyler Conklin, who towards the end of last year started to kind of get a little chemistry going. He ended up with over 600 yards, which, for me, for someone that pays a lot of attention to the tight end position, that never really popped. And he was never really above like 5,000 or 5,200 on FanDuel. I don't know. He just must have done it in super consistently, like only 3 or 4 catches a game.
Yeah, 5 for 50 every time.
Right.
Well, do you want to hear super consistent? Tyler Conklin has caught, or he's gotten 87 targets 3 years in a row. Exactly 87 targets.
Yeah, 87. 87 I have written down. Yep.
Rodgers is going to look at him game 9 and be like, he's a quota, dude. Hit the bench.
Yep.
He also had 1 carry for 0 yards.
Hell yeah.
But then we got someone else who, I know this is his third season, but someone from Ohio State that I always kind of liked, Jeremy Ruckert.
It's not happening, Ryan.
Damn it. Quit stomping on my dreams. Maybe next year. We'll see. Ugh. He's still young. All right. Then we got Zach Kuntz. We got Kenny Yabo or Yaboa. I don't know how you say it. He's not relevant enough to for me to learn that. Tyler Conklin and Jeremy Ruckert could be interesting this year, especially, who knows, maybe Rodgers develops some chemistry with Ruckert for those six games he'll be on the field. We'll go into their draft really quick. They picked up an offensive tackle, one of the best in the draft this year, Fashanu, who should add some depth. But, I mean, even with that addition, their offensive line's still not that great.
I disagree. I disagree with you wholeheartedly on that.
I don't think so. I don't think so. We'll see.
Dude, they signed two Ravens offensive linemen, and they got Tyron Smith from Dallas. So they're like, our line sucked. We're going to put a bunch of investment into that, which I support because I've decided that my most boomer opinion on earth is that all NFL teams should take at least one offensive or defensive lineman in the first two rounds of the draft.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it's always good to protect your quarterback. They waited a while. At pick 65, they got Malachi Corley. And then 134, they got Braylon Allen. Then they picked up that Jordan Travis, the Florida State quarterback.
Yeah, who was awesome. His tape was really fun.
Wasn't that bad.
It's just Jaren Hall again. It's just what it is.
Dude, Jordan Travis is going to be a Canadian Football League dominator.
Wait, who starts more games this year? Jordan Travis or Sam Darnold?
Oh, no.
Sam Darnold.
I don't think Travis is starting this year, unless frickin' Rodgers and Tyrod go down. That's it. That's the only way. Then they got Isaiah Davis from San Diego State at 173. Then they got a cornerback and a safety to help out to pad a little bit with that defense. Their defense should be pretty good this year with the likes of Sauce Gardner and C.J. Mosley still there, and the addition of a couple new free agent signings and a couple guys in the draft. Their defense is going to keep them in games, and I think the schedules, when we look at their schedule later, you'll see a lot. I think a lot of their games will be real close, and the defense is going to help with that, help keep those games close, especially if Rodgers is not playing.
Yeah, whatever happens this year with like record, and if they don't hit like the mark, whatever their expectation for the season is, I don't think Robert Saleh survives the season, but I still believe that he should still be retained by the Jets as defensive coordinator, because if they let him go to another team as a defensive-minded coach, they're stupid.
Sure. Yeah, and we'll get into that in a second, because here's another reason why I always like to be optimistic about every team that I do research on, you know.
Yeah, okay.
You
know me.
It's, yeah. except for... when I started looking at some stats about Robert Saleh and the Jets, first of all, Rodgers played his statistical career worst year in 2022. All right. He barely made it to 3,600 yards, 26 touchdowns, and 12 interceptions. Oh, my little note says Foot Clan. That's funny.
Remember how we like the whole discourse used to be up in Green Bay of like how Rodgers has no weapons, and now the entire discourse about Green Bay is how nobody wants any receiving weapons in that place because there's too many.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah. They immediately after he left, they're like, let's pick up four wide receivers and two tight ends.
Yep.
Before we get too far and temper our expectations and think that the Jets are gonna have a 10 or more win season. Under Robert Saleh, they've had the last 2 years, they've gone 7-10 both years. All right. Robert Saleh's 353 win percentage is the worst for any Jets coach who has held the position for 2 years or more ever.
Oh, I think it's honestly a miracle that they're 7-10. Like, if you look at how bad that offense has been sequentially the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, outside of Breece Hall, like, I mean, who's going to be a beast again? I hope he gets like 1,800 yards. That'd be sick, but he's going to be fun to watch, and I'm going to want him in redraft. But
yeah, we cover him in like ADP wise. Like, I'll tell you how high I am on Breece.
So since 2021, when Robert Saleh was hired, the Jets have been the fifth most penalized team in the NFL 318 times. All right. With an 18 and 33 record. All right. That's the fourth worst in the NFL since 2021. Do you know that?
Yeah, that sucks.
The other note I had written down was Rodgers is going to be 40 years old this year. I don't know if he's going to be able to recoup from his broken thumb, in 2022, his Achilles in 2023, and his foot problems that he had as well.
He had COVID toe, dude.
Yeah.
He did have COVID toe. Right?
Yeah. And like I said, 2022 was his statistical worst year as a quarterback. And we have no sample size from last year. He was able to develop zero chemistry with anyone in terms of real-time gameplay.
Well, we do have the four snaps where he obviously could have taken the check down and played a Euro ball and it ended his almost career, right?
Wait. Five snaps. You got to count his Achilles.
Okay. Aaron Rodgers last year was sacked 25% of the time that he was on. So after I just said all that, it's hard for me. Like I said, a lot of these games are going to be close and maybe they squeak out some really close wins, but I don't think they're going to be a dominant force. Buffalo did a lot of stuff this year, so maybe they got a chance to split with Buffalo this year. Well, we'll get into that when we get into the schedule, but it seems like they got a better chance in their division this year. In terms of the league, I'd be shocked if they made the playoffs. Absolutely shocked. Who knows? Rodgers could just turn around and have a 4,500-yard passing season, but I think the chances of that happening are less likely.
They absolutely have the talent to, right?
Right, yeah.
But, like, if they're the Jets. They're going to Jets it up.
Right. Yeah.
I did see something funny that I wanted to bring up. You guys know who the OC is, right? It's Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fucking over.
When Aaron Rodgers was gone during minicamp, the Jets head quarterback coach Todd Downing called plays for a day while Hackett was on the sideline watching.
Wow.
So no Rodgers, no Hackett, apparently.
This is like Denver, dude.
Yeah.
Just being except fucking there's normal. Actual talent. There's actual talent on this team. Has anyone got anything to say about Breece Hall? Because he's going to be the star of this team.
I think he finishes running back one on the year.
I think that's a great expectation.
I'm 25 teams done with my individual team previews, and I have Breece as RB2 behind CMC.
I would take Breece Hall. Yeah. Obviously, you have to take CMC 101, right? But like, I am taking, and I'm going to tell everybody, you should take Breece Hall at 102. I'm not a running back guy, but I am all in at Breece Hall at 102.
All in my ass.
Yep.
I'm definitely in on Breece Hall. And honestly, maybe not in redraft, but in Dynasty, I want a lot of Braylon Allen.
Sure.
Because Breece goes down. This guy's a beast. And his tape was really, really good when we watched him when we were looking at rookies for Wisconsin.
We've also seen, too, like the checkdown is like the heavily used weapon outside of like 175 Garrett Wilson targets that he's going to catch 55 of them, right? So, like,
sure,
you could kind of put anybody who's not the corpse of Dalvin Cook on that offense and be like, hey, dude, you're going to get 50 targets minimum,
right?
And there's value in that.
So, here's my Breece shit. Zach Wilson and Trevor Siemian were absolutely elite, like Derek Carr levels of checkdown last year. And like Rodgers isn't going to do that.
I was going to say that. You think like Breece is going to have 600 yards with Rodgers behind center? I mean, like they're not going to be using him like that.
Well, not catching the ball, but at the same time too, like Tony was saying, they significantly increased their O-line, right? So like technically the pass blocking should be better. So he should be able to have
more
holes and be explosive, right? So like we're not going to get the PPR benefit, but we should still see like 1200 yards on the ground.
That's essentially what I was going for is the Jets last year, their offensive line was third from the worst in yards allowed before contact per carry. And Breece was still the fucking man.
Sure.
Breece was second in the league. He averaged 3.25 yards after contact per attempt.
Jesus Christ.
Damn.
73% of his rushing yards came after contact last year. So even if the pass game numbers go down, I think the run game numbers are going to come up like crazy.
Yeah.
the Jets, one of the things that I've been doing for all the teams is doing their like pass and run rates. And one of the things that I look at is what's their percentage of passing inside the 10-yard line. Jets were fifth. They passed inside the 10 at a 73% clip. So,
hey, dude, really? Those are J.J. McCarthy numbers.
But that's going down, right? Like, that number's going to go down. If you pay all this money for these run blockers, you get a guy from the Cowboys and two guys from the Ravens, and you draft a tackle in the first round, they're trying to win with their line. And so I think if Brees goes down in receptions, he's going to go up in rushing yards because, yeah, he is the man.
They're going to play bully ball, right? They're going to play defensive, like, okay, lock them down, and we're just going to bleed the clock out. Those wins are going to be, like, 17 to 14, right?
Yeah.
Garrett Wilson, going to be a boss. I think whether or not Rodgers is under center or someone else, he's still going to have 1,000 yards. I'm putting him at, like, 1,300 if Rodgers plays the whole season. But we all know my narrative. He won't, so...
Honestly, dude, I think if Rodgers plays, it's going to be like 1,500.
Yeah, I think his season stats will mirror last year's. And if Rodgers plays the whole season, it'll be like, you know, 25-30% more.
I have Garrett Wilson as wide receiver 6.
Ooh.
Damn, yep. Dude.
Yep.
Yeah, you're high on him.
I got a trade offer in my Dynasty League this year. This week it was... The guy was giving up, this guy has like no depth. So he was giving up 2 firsts. So they'd be like top 4 picks the next 2 years, Garrett Wilson. And I was sending over Pickens and 2 firsts. And I was like, that's really rich, bro. And like for a point per game standard, I don't really see like a significant difference with like the fluidity of those picks. So I was like, I'll give you Pittman a second and like, I think a third or someone else a second. Automatically declined. Sure. I'm like, all right, whatever. You can take it. But like, I've always been like, I never doubted Garrett Wilson. It's just the fact that he's on a cursed franchise that like weighs him down for me. So like more has to go right than goes wrong.
Right.
Sure. One last prediction I have, or are you still talking? Go ahead.
I have one Garrett Wilson thing. Reception perception, they do the route trees with the success rates. And I love those because they're less about what was your catch versus attempt in those zones, but more like, did you get open? Did you make the play that you were supposed to make? So it's not statistical. It's film-based. Let me just tell you. So Ryan, they break it down in 3 parts. They have how do they beat man coverage, how do they beat zone coverage, and how do they beat press coverage. He was 80% against press, 96% against man, and 93rd% in beating zone.
Really?
Like, this dude, those are like the 3 predictors. This website, this reception perception site, is pretty much the site that was on Stephon Diggs before everybody else.
Okay.
And that's kind of what gave them legitimacy as a company. And they're like, hey, this is the time. Their breakouts for this year are not like super spicy sleepers, but they're like, look, Garrett Wilson's going to fucking crush and Drake Wilson's going to blow up this year.
Okay. Drake London.
Drake London. Drake Wilson. I like it.
Let's go. That's his brother.
Both top 5 picks on bad franchises.
Yeah.
One last prediction I have for Tyler Conklin. He did have 0 touchdowns last year, but Rodgers likes to throw touchdowns in the red zone to the tight end position.
Yes, sir.
So I'm calling Conklin for 5 or more touchdowns this year.
Whoa.
I love it.
I'm calling it.
I'm
calling it. All right. So anything else we want to talk about the Jets before we go into the schedule?
I don't mind Mike Williams.
Nick
Chubb this year.
That's true.
I didn't really write too many predictions and stuff down for him just because I don't know how he's going to come off that Achilles injury. He's not 24 anymore. He's what, 31, 32, right?
30. He's 30 this year.
30.
He's someone that I'm grabbing in best ball. I can get him as a 10th rounder right now, and I'm all over.
Yeah, him. I mean, like at that point in the game and in best ball, you get 3 games of 20 points. He's already paid off, right?
For like, I mean, redraft. He'll benefit just because Garrett Wilson's on the field. I feel like that. Yeah.
But Garrett Wilson will benefit because he's on the field.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Yes. Because he doesn't play the deep threat. And like to me, it's like why do you have Alan Lazard? Isn't Alan Lazard the field stretcher, quote unquote, right? Like, that's what Mike Williams does. He just goes straight, catches a contested catch rate ball, and then gets injured.
I will say this. He was 92nd in route win rate, Alan Lazard. He's bad.
Damn.
But he's like Nathaniel Hackett, man. He's a nepotism hire. He's Rodgers' boy. He knows the system from Green Bay.
Yeah.
Right. And
I mean, you just got to give him the right answers on what do you think of 9/11? And then you're like, here's $50 million. I'm like, all
right. Right.
Dude, I would deny pretty much anything if you gave me $50 million.
Yeah, right.
All right. That was my Jet shit, too. Good stuff.
Technically, right now, Jets have about the 11th easiest schedule. But I don't think it's going to be that easy for them. Let's start with first game. They're also, as I mentioned earlier, when they put out the schedule, what was that, like 3-4 weeks ago? The Jets have like 6 primetime games.
Ugh, cursed.
And I'm sure some of those will get flexed once Rodgers isn't playing anymore. But oh, so week one, they go to San Francisco. I'm calling that a loss.
Major L. Loss.
They go to Tennessee. That's a new. By the way, that game in Frisco is also a Monday night game.
Ugh.
Oh, dude, we get to run back the Achilles injury?
Oh, hang on. I got a question.
Is it on 9/11?
is Elon Musk in attendance?
Ooh.
In week one,
maybe.
I hope maybe he dies before that happens. Maybe
he's sitting on top of the X Tower.
Dude, Rodgers is gonna show up to the game in a Cybertruck.
I don't think so. I think Rodgers like clowns on him, right? Like, I don't think Rodgers operates in the Elon sphere.
I wonder.
He's his closet Elon, probably.
I don't think their egos can mesh.
Sure.
It's too much for each other. Yeah.
Elon also feels like a sports ball guy. It's like, I don't like sports, it's for ignorant people. That's just, I get that right from Elon Musk.
Yeah. Black people play this sport? Ew.
It's there to tame the masses.
Right.
That's an intellectual. I like chess.
Right. Yeah, right. Dude, bishop to knight 6, you're done. okay, so week 2 at Tennessee is a noon game. I'm calling that a win, actually.
Will Levis is going to get decimated.
Yeah, it's a dub.
Next week on Thursday Night Football. Short week for the Jets and New England. They're playing New England for their first home game. The Jets' first home game. I have that down as a win, too. Week 4, another home game against Denver at noon. That's a win. Week 5, international. I believe this is the first London game. So it will be at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Playing Minnesota, I'm calling that a win.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a win for sure.
JJ McCarthy's going to throw 3 picks in that game.
So they're starting the year 4-1. Here's where it starts to go downhill. All right. Even though I said they would split with Buffalo, I have them winning against Buffalo on Monday Night Football at the Jets Stadium. So I'm having them split with Buffalo this year.
Sure.
Very fair.
So that's another win. They are now 5-1. Then they go to Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football. I'm calling that a loss.
Yeah, I'm with that.
I think it's a win.
Okay. Damn, Shane, 6-1 starts season.
I think the defense is going to severely overperform.
Sure.
I think coaching is going to win out that game. Tomlin always comes ahead in that shit.
Yeah, anyone that's not Nathaniel Hackett has the coaching advantage.
Then they go to New England as a noon game. I have that as a win.
Yep.
Then they go play Thursday Night Football in Jets Stadium against Houston. I have that as a loss.
Yes.
Then they go to Arizona, Sunday noon game. I have that as a loss.
Yes. Cardinal supremacy on this podcast.
Let's go.
Week 11, Sunday Night Football, they play Indianapolis. I have that down as a win.
Yeah, I don't think Indy's defense can hold up.
Then week 12, they have a bye. Week 13, they're at home against Seattle. I have that as a win.
That's a win.
Then they start losing. I only have them, let's see. Week 14, they go to Miami. That's a loss. Week 13, they go to Jacksonville. I have that as a loss.
That'd be a close game.
That will be.
Week 16, they play the Rams at home. I have that as a win.
That's a coin toss for me, too.
Sure. Week 17, they go to Buffalo. I have that as a loss since I have them splitting. And then week 18, time to be determined against Miami. I have them losing both games against Miami this year.
Well, that one's in New York, and it's cold weather, too. So.
That's true.
I think we need to also factor in, like, November, right? The election, when Robert Kennedy kicks into play, like, once November hits, of, like, we might need to adjust our lines based on when Rodgers starts not showing up to practice.
Dude, on his days off, he's absolutely hitting the campaign trail.
Yeah.
Good point.
I have him at 9-8.
Okay. Yeah, I have him 8-9. If you go with that cold weather scenario with... in New York against Miami, maybe they can squeak out a win. Yeah. But I'd be shocked if they made the playoffs. And I think they have to get 10 wins or more to make the playoffs this year.
Buffalo needs to collapse.
That too. Yeah. And Miami won't. So
I think Miami's going to be glass cannon again, like they were last year. They're going to look better on paper and then just fall apart when the pressure hits them.
Okay.
The barometric pressure.
Hey. So that is the Aaron Rodgers Foot Clan, New York Jets.
Jets.
All right, cool. So
we're going to take a quick break, and we'll see you for the next episode where we cover the Minnesota Football Vikings and the Green Bay Packers. So we'll see you in a
Skull.
Bit. And goodbye.
He was Polly.